My name is Russell Spatz. I'm an alcoholic. I'm a member of the Carl Gables Group, and I haven't found it necessary to have a drink since January 25th, 1981. And as Ray O'Keefe used to say, I've been around AA for a long time. You can see by looking at me, I've been somewhere for a long time. But it's good to be here. I remember when did this group first start? I was the first speaker?
About a year and a half ago.
It was only a year and a half ago? Two years ago. You had like two people and a rabbit or something here, you know? I mean, look at this. Well, it's grown, probably because I haven't been back, you know? I mean, it's, you know. No, it's great to see you guys here, and it's really a pleasure to be here. I drove up from Miami with two of my buddies, and it's just a wonderful thing to be here. And I'm going to sort of just do the best I can to tell you what it was like for me and give you a little bit about my experience and whatever few things I've picked up. You know, like they say in the back of the big book, it says, we know, you know, the guys who wrote this book, the guys were like following, you know, like our mentors, like Bill and Bob, you know, and after you read the whole book and you base your life on it, you get to the end of the book and they say, we know but a little. You know, that's all comforting, you know, and they don't know much, you know, and that's sort of like me. You know, I came in here and I was brilliant before I got here and I knew everything. Of course, that's all I knew, but I knew everything. And now I've got like a little over 31 years and I don't know much. I don't know nothing, you know. I'm stupid. I must be stupid. All my sponsees tell me I don't understand. They come up to me with all these problems. I don't even know why they come up to me. They keep on coming up to me and I give them the best shot. I give them an answer. They say, but you don't understand. So the guy who's going to be talking to you, I don't understand anything, but I'm just going to start talking, you know. It never stopped an alcoholic from talking, so I'm going to try to give you my experience. That's what I try to do. I try to be as transparent as possible. And because of a loving God that I found in Alcoholics Anonymous, to a certain extent, nobody's perfect, I'm able to actually be transparent today, for the most part. That means I don't sit around and filter a lot of stuff out, like what do they think of me if I say this, and what's going to happen if I say that, and will they like me if I say this thing, or how does this sound? So it's just going to sort of come out. And, you know, that's a blessing for an alcoholic when you live your entire life worrying about what other people think about you. I'm not talking about you guys. I can tell you're a lucky cut above. You know, but in the groups I come from that aren't as sophisticated as you guys, they probably sit around worrying about, you know, why did I say this and why did I do that? And, you know, what are people going to think about me if I do this? And, you know, running that filter through their brain and, you know, thinking about what a piece of shit they are and how they wish they were dead and they'll never get it. And I'm talking about alcoholics other than you guys, you know, that have those voices going on in their minds. And we'll talk a little bit about that, about self-deprecation and feeling crappy about yourself and putting on masks and how we live our lives. And we'll talk about, I want to talk a lot about freedom, that new freedom, not the old freedom. I want to talk about the new freedom and the new happiness. So we'll talk a lot about, I want to talk about the joy of living. And I want to talk about the promises, not just experiencing them once in a while, but living a life where your entire life is all about the promises. And so I like to share my experience because that's all I have, my story. All of our stories are a little bit different and a little unique, I guess, in that way. But I guess one of the things alcoholics think about themselves before they come in here is that they're so different. They're so unique. You know, that's what we run off. You know, you don't understand. You know, when somebody used to come up to me and say, you know, if they had the courage or whatever it is it takes to come up to me and say, I think you may have a drinking problem. Not too many people talk to me about my, quote, drinking problem. And my first wife did. I got rid of her. And, actually, she got rid of me. I'll talk a little bit about that. But if you had the temerity to talk to me about my drinking problem, I'd explain to you very nicely that I could understand that that knowing what you know, knowing the little that you know about me, and about my life, I can see why you would think I might have a drinking problem. But if you really knew me and understood all the nuances of my life and, you know, how my divorce was and my parents, the family I came from, you'd understand that I don't drink because I have a drinking problem. I drink because I have problems. As a matter of fact, my drinking perfectly matches my problems. So one day, my problems are going to go away, and I'm going to have a lot of money, and I'm going to have the Playboy bunny, and I'm going to have this, and I'm going to have that, and I won't have to drink anymore. So thank you for your advice, but why don't you go screw yourself? And so the idea is I didn't have a lot of people talking to me about what they thought was wrong with me, because if you were going to come at me about what was wrong with me, you'd be prepared to hear what I thought was wrong about you and your mother. You know, you would come at me, but it wasn't going to be for free, you know. And I don't like people talking to me about me. So in any event, this is 12 steps, and you're probably used to people going through, like, step 1 through 12. Well, that ain't going to happen here. But, you know, But we got to keep track. You know, you got to lower your expectations. When I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, one of my sponsors said, you know, I used to have resentments. Anybody ever have a resentment? Because, you know, a lot of resentments come from thinking that things are supposed to go a certain way and they don't go your way and you get pissed off. Because, you know, in an alcoholic's world, things are supposed to go the way they think things are supposed to go. And so if traffic doesn't move properly or the weather's different or the guy's supposed to speak on the first step and he accidentally talks about the second step or whatever the heck it is, it doesn't matter how good or bad it is, you got a resentment. Well, my sponsor used to say, he says, you know what you ought to do? Instead of trying to change the world, why don't you just lower your expectations? Why don't you just enjoy yourself and lower your expectations? So I started lowering my expectations on people, and I found as I lowered my expectations and didn't throw so much crap on the way they were supposed to act, I found I got less pissed off. And you know, it's all about not being upsettable. I can tell how much sobriety you have just based upon how upset you get and over what you get upset about. As a matter of fact, that's why I'm here. That's why I'm here. I'm here to help you guys. This is what I'm going to do. I'm going to comfort the disturbed and disturb the comfortable. You know, we have a spiritual axiom here. Does anybody know what the 10-step spiritual axiom is? Whenever you're disturbed, no matter what the cause, there's something wrong with you. I mean, listen, I'm not making this stuff up. This isn't like Russell's spiritual axiom. I mean, as a matter of fact, my axiom is, whenever I'm disturbed, there's something wrong with you. I mean, I can prove it mathematically. I mean, I can prove it scientifically. You know, I mean, there's no question about it. I can name it. I can see if you would only change, I'd be okay. But unfortunately, that's not the way. You see, A is all counterintuitive. It all goes opposite to the way I think life ought to run. As a matter of fact, if I could do, think, believe, have the attitudes this book says I'm supposed to have on my own, I wouldn't be an Alcoholics Anonymous. I'd be out there running the world and everything like that. But unfortunately, I'm like, my alcoholism is like being right-handed. You know, I'm right-handed. I'm used to using my right hand. I was born right-handed. I'll die right-handed. You know, I'm going to go to shake my hand. I shake my hand. You know, I eat with my right hand. If you were to tell me that my entire problem, and I you know why I use my right? Because I feel comfortable using my right hand. I don't feel comfortable using my left hand. I feel comfortable using my right hand. What's wrong with that? A lot of people are right-handed. Now, if you were to come up to me and say, listen, you know, we've analyzed your situation, and your problem is you're using your right hand. And from now on, to do everything, you're going to have to use your left hand. Well, of course, the first thing I'd say is you're full of crap. You know, that's impossible. But if I got desperate enough to actually use my left hand, and all of a sudden everything started changing. You know, the Bible says if your right hand offends thee, cut it off. If one of your members offends thee, get rid of it. So if I actually had the ability, if that was the power to get rid of my right hand, the thing that I, you know, the things that I feel comfortable doing, like thinking like an alcoholic, you know what it says? It says the drinking's a symptom. It's not even a disease, it's a symptom. It says the disease centers in our mind, not our body. It has something to do with the way we think. So apparently it has to do with our thinking. How do you cut off your thinking? How do you cut off your brain? If the problem is really your thinking, I don't know whether you know this. You know, there are people, I've seen people with Alcoholics Anonymous with 5, 10, 15, 20 years in AA who have even done the steps and done these meetings and they drink again. And you're not going to believe this. Every one of those people, right before they drink, after 20 years of AA, you know what? They're all sober. I'm serious. Every person who's ever slipped in Alcoholics Anonymous, the moment before he drinks, really, you can prove it mathematically. As a matter of fact, if you don't understand that, you're going to have to go to another meeting, like a remedial class. They're sober. What kind of person, after 20 years of going to AA meetings, or 5 years, or even 2 days, or whatever it is, drinks again, sober? I mean, I can understand if you got to run through your system, or you can't go, but if you're sober 2, 3, 4, 5 years, and you got all this stuff in your belly, what kind of person drinks after that much time sober? You want to know what kind of person? An insane person. A crazy person, because that's what this disease is. It's a form of insanity. So how do you cut off? I mean, you can cut off your right hand. How do you cut off your thinking? How do you stop your thinking? How do you stop they can't do that to me? Who the hell they think they are? They don't know who they're screwing with. How do you cut that out? How do you cut out the I feel sorry for myself? You know, I was a self-pityaholic. You know, so you know what they say, whenever you're disturbed, no matter what the cause, there's something wrong with you. So if I say something to disturb you, I mean, I'll try to control myself, but it never works. So if I say something to disturb you, that means what? If some of you walk out here and say, why are you disturbed? You say, because Russell. No, not because Russell. because there's something wrong with you. So my whole goal at this meeting is to piss you off. Because if I can, because that's the only way we learn in here. Because if I can piss you off so that you can't stop thinking about me, you walk away in the car and say, I can't believe that son of a, who does he think he is? This guy doesn't know what he's doing. I mean, you'll be thinking about me for a week. I'll be going home saying things like, why the hell did I say that? That was stupid. But in any event, you'll be thinking about, I'll be changing my mind. But in any event, well, you know, when you throw a rock into a pack of dogs, the one that yells the loudest is the one that gets hit. So if I say something and it hits you and it pisses you off, you're going to do one of two things. You're going to hold the resentment, and you'll end up dying and drinking, and that's how we purify AA, so it's not a big deal. You know, alcohol. You know, really, alcoholics are about as common as dirt. You know, it's not like we're any great shakes, you know, and everything. Or somewhere along the line saying, I can't stand this. So why am I all pissed off? And you'll do an inventory on it. You'll talk to a sponsor, and you'll understand why you're pissed off at me, and it'll have nothing to do with what I said. It has something to do with something else that's inside of you, because you don't see the world the way it is. You see the world the way you are. And so what'll happen is all of a sudden you'll learn something about yourself, and you'll accept something about yourself, and you'll change just that little, and you'll grow up a little. Instead of being a three-year-old thumb-sucking crybaby, you'll grow up until you'll become like a man. You understand what I'm saying? And then you'll come up to me 5 years from now and say, I used to hate you, but now I love you. And that's how it works, you know? So if I piss you off, you owe me like a co-payment. It's like a spiritual MRI. You understand what I'm saying? So let's talk about this alcoholism deal. So I went to a meeting when I was about... I'm going to tell you a few stories, because it really isn't the stories. I don't know, I guess the secret is in the stories, somehow buried into the stories, you know. And I'm going to string a couple stories together. I see these people here, they're actually people here. I just finished the Step series. Where was I? The Saturday Night Sobriety Group, like down the street. And I see people here from that Step series that I was just did 12 weeks down. Now, these are very sick people. These people. This is proof of an extremely boring life. You know what I mean? I tell you, this must be a bad TV night or something. You know, I'm sitting with a guy. I told him, because you're going to hear the same stories. Well, you know, it'll be in a different order, or maybe I'll change them. I don't know. So I'm sitting in this Denny's restaurant with this guy who I just brought to a meeting. I'm about 5 or 6 years sober. And we're drinking coffee, and it's like 10, 11 o'clock at night, it's his first meeting. He just went to his meeting, and we're drinking coffee in a Denny's, for God's sake. So there's nobody there, just me and him, and drinking the coffee. And he looks at me, he says, well, yeah, that was pretty good. And he says, but what do you do for fun? And I didn't have the heart to tell him that I was having the greatest time of my life. Like in AA, this is like top of the world. He was looking for the dancing girls, you know, and the strip joints. And, you know, this was it, you know. So this is how we have fun in here. But, you know, you can't get arrested or anything. So it ain't so big, any big deal. So I went to an AA meeting when I was about, I don't know, a few months sober. And, I've had three sponsors. They're all wonderful people, and I'll talk quite a lot about them because I learned a long time ago, and I believe this to be true, and we'll go into this a little more depth later on in the steps, that the person you'll really be in the next 5 years will depend upon who you hang out with and the books you read. And the books you read will depend on who you hang out with. And trust me on this, and this goes a little bit deeper, a little farther than where I want to go to. We'll go into this later on. Really, who the old saying, you lie down with dogs, you get up with fleas, and you are who you associate with. You choose who to associate with. You know, if you look in the book, there's a step before the steps. There really is. It says, if you want what we have and are willing to go to any length to get it, then you're ready to take certain steps. Am I misquoting that?
No.
If you want what we have, well, of course, you'd have to know what we is and what we have. And you'd have to have a we, right? You'd have to have a we. That would be a person, a group of people, somebody that you're looking at, and you're saying, I want what he has. I want what you... I went to a meeting once with the Carl Gables group many, many years ago, and there was a new gal that came in, and there was a gal chairing the meeting. I'll never forget. It was a gal named Gay. She was just a wonderful gal, and I'm sure she's still alive. She's somewhere else now, and she's probably got about 40 years now. And she was chairing the meeting. She just looked great, and she sounded great. And this gal, it was her first AA meeting. And she was just sitting there watching Gay, just looking at Gay. And we're not perfect, and you don't put us on a pedestal. We don't get put on a pedestal, but don't kid yourself. This is passed along from person to person, And people, if it wasn't for people getting sober and growing in his image and likeness, like they say in the sixth step, that's what separates the men from the boys, the one who repeatedly tries these steps so he wants to grow in his image and likeness. And people seeing this thing not only as a theory that's in a book and a bunch of papers, if I didn't see this thing played out in the men and women in Alcoholics Anonymous, I wouldn't be around here. If there weren't the Joe Snyders, you know what I mean, or the Joe Snyders or the Bob Sullivans or the sponsors I hung around or the men I hung around or the Al Kennedys, if these people weren't there so I could feel them and touch them so that I had something to believe in and say, this thing really works, you know what I mean? I wouldn't be here. If everybody in here, even the ones with 30 years, acted like they had 3 months, I wouldn't be here, because there were men and women that actually were around here that were working these things that were transformed and they were living this book. And you could see it. And they became part of my we. And I wanted what they had. And I didn't even know what they had, but I knew they had something different than me. As a matter of fact, in Alcoholics number 3, and I know my experience is not an unusual experience. In Alcoholics number 3 in the big book, this is Bill Dotson's story. If you know, and I read a lot from the big book, and I think it's so important to know, not only the big book, I would suggest you really get Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers and read that. I'm going to talk about that in one of these sessions. He says, Bill Dotson says the following in talking about Bill Wilson. And I want to read this to you because this is really, in a sense, how I thought when I think about it, you know, what happened to me. He was sitting in his living room after 3 weeks getting out of the hospital. And this is what he says. You know, when he had 15 years sobriety, they asked him to write a little story about himself, and it's called Alcoholics Anonymous number 3. And what happens is, as I said, I have a little over 31 years sobriety, you know, but it's a funny thing about sobriety, and I know we have different lengths in here. We got people with 2 weeks and 2 years and 20 years and 40 years. It's a funny thing as you go along, you may go to thousands of meetings. You may meet thousands of people. But in your story, as you're recollecting your story and you're thinking to yourself, there'll only be a few things that actually stand out. That stand out like, I remember things. I don't remember 99% of stuff that happened in the last year. But I remember stuff that happened 30 years ago at one meeting when one guy said one thing to me like I'll never forget, like it was yesterday. And that's the way this thing works. You know, you walk around in this deal like in a fog, not having any understanding of what's going on. And you bump into some guy, some Eskimo that, as Bob Orwell says, that you've never seen before. And he says one thing to you, and a point, you know, if you keep on walking in the direction you're headed, the direction you're walking, you'll wind up where you're headed. You know, and what this one guy will say one thing to you at a meeting, and you'll hear one thing. It may not even be the thing he says, but it'll be the thing you hear, and all of a sudden something will click, and you'll walk 1 degree in a different direction. And then you bump into another guy, and then you bump into another guy, and somehow, some way, you get inspired and you change. You know, and a lot of us change, and as a matter of fact, most of the change comes through some sort of pain. You know, that's how we get a new perception, through repeated humiliations and the final crushing of our self-sufficiency. We don't get a new perception by people keeping on giving us money. We don't get a new perception by being able to keep on charging up the credit card and buying stuff we can't afford to impress people we don't like. You know, we don't get a new perception as that. We get a new perception when they cut off the credit card. We get a new perception when we get arrested for DUI. That's when we get the new perception about stuff, when bad things happen to us, when we start getting consequences. That's when I came into Alcoholics Anonymous at the perfect time, when the consequences of my drinking came at me faster than my ability to lower my standards. That's when I came in, when it came at me so fast, where I couldn't look at myself in the mirror and say, you know, there's no problem. You'd be incredibly surprised, probably you guys wouldn't be surprised because of where you are, but you'd be surprised as far as alcoholics are concerned as to how low they can sink, how many people they can hurt, how bad they can ruin their lives, and still look in the mirror and say, I'm doing great. It's amazing, you know, any normal human being would say, lock me up, and an alcoholic can screw everybody in the world and ruin children and ruin a wife and ruin everything in the world and rape, rob, and steal and somehow feel that he's better than everybody else and smarter and it's not that bad. I mean, there's some weird stuff that has to happen to you, and not only because of the alcohol, but because of the thinking. Because the thinking for me is like using my right hand. And so I'll use my left hand. You may tell me to use my left hand, like I said before, and I may start using it. And my life will get better. And I start saying, hey, this left hand thing is great. I love you. I use my left hand, and all of a sudden, good things are happening. I feel good about myself. But you want to know something? There'll always be, until I die, a desire to use my right hand. I'll always somehow want to use my right. I'll always somehow want to think the way I think. I'll always somehow want to compare my insides to your outsides or worry about what I don't have or think that if I only had this, I'd be okay, or if I only had that, I'd be okay, or somehow I'm not sufficient in myself. There's something that has to happen that has to transform me so that I don't think the way I think, because that's where the real disease lies. It lies in your brain. And the drinking is but a symptom of the disease. So I go to this meeting, and the disease really plays out for me when I'm not drinking. As a matter of fact, I didn't even experience alcoholism when I was drinking. You don't experience alcoholism when you're drinking. You experience something called drunk. Maybe you experienced alcoholism, but the only time I ever experienced alcoholism is when I'm not drinking. You know, when you stop drinking, and then you say things like, "Now I know why I drank." Because, you see, you remember, Dr. O used to say, Dr. O, the guy who said, "Dr. Alcoholic Addict," I was at a meeting once where he said, he used to pop pills, you know, he used to chew his booze, he used to drink and also pop pills. And he was talking about, and he used to write his own scripts because he was a doctor, he's an MD. And, you know, whatever the pills were, he was taking Milltowns back then or whatever it was, you know. And so one of the things I heard him say, which I thought was cute, but it was so true, he said, "I never wrote myself a script. I never took a pill. I never took a controlled substance, a pill, where I didn't exhibit the exact symptoms that pill called for, that pill called for." He says, and then he paused and he said, "Well, I either exhibited them or I felt them coming on." Well, that's the thing with alcoholism. I never experienced alcoholism. I never wanted to experience alcoholism. Now, I didn't know what alcoholism was, because an alcoholic, what does it say? Our alcoholic thinking is natural to us. It's normal to us. Our alcoholic ways are normal to us. So to feel pissed off, to feel sorry for yourself, to feel angry, to feel upset, to be restless, irritable, discontent, bored, happy, up, down, all sorts of stuff, it doesn't seem strange to me, or it's just me. It's me. You want to know what alcohol is? It's me. It's the way I feel. It's me. You know, somebody will say, "Why can't you be like your brother?" Well, how the hell do you do that? You know, how do you be like somebody else? This is me. This is the way it's not alcoholism, it's Russellism. Russell. I have Russellism. It's just the way I am. You're an asshole. You know what I mean? It's just me. And I didn't have alcoholism. I just had meism. And you know something? If you had meism like I had meism, you drink too. You know, that's the bottom line. We drink because we can't stand being sober. See, we don't have a problem with alcohol. We have a problem being sober. That's what it says in the book. It says alcoholics are men and women who drink. Why do we drink? We drink because we are restless, we are irritable, and we are discontented. Unless we can again, and you can add anything you want. You can add feeling sorry for yourself, bipolar. I don't care what you want to say, bipolar, tripolar, whatever the hell it is, polar bear. We are restless, irritable, and discontented. Unless we can again experience a sense of ease and comfort, which comes at once by taking a few drinks. Drinks which you see others taking with impunity. I drank because I couldn't stand the way I was sober. Sometimes I'd be up, sometimes I'd be down. Hey, listen. Every time I said in my mind, "I got him now. I'm king of the world. I got $1 million. I'm the best." And that's what my thinking told me. That kind of thinking is the same thinking where 5 minutes later, when you see somebody doing better, you say, "I'm a piece of crap." The kind of thinking where you judge yourself and you're up and you're down and you're there. Even when you're good, you're just setting yourself for the next time you feel like sucking your thumb. I was never okay. I was an if-onlier and a yes-butter and a you-don't-understander. And my life was always, if only I had a new car. If only I had a new girl. If I only did, there was always something I had to add on to me. New shirt, new suit, no new job. There was always something I had to add to myself to make me okay, because I was never okay right here, right now. You know, if I was in the car, some gal told me, "You won't know what sobriety is until you drive in the car with the radio off." I didn't know what she was talking about, because I'd never ridden in the car with the radio off. I never did anything with stuff off. I always was TV going, a car, you know, I had to have the radio on, something going on, because if it was quiet, I couldn't stand silence. Because silence would be me alone with my thoughts, and my thoughts were always bad thoughts about myself and other people. There was something going on where I was just restless. I was just irritable. I had to have something always to distract my mind. And so what alcohol did for me is, like, whenever alcoholism would raise its ugly head, whatever it feels like, it might feel like being restless. It might feel like being irritated. It might feel like being excited. It might feel like being giddy. It might, whatever alcoholism feels like, it was somehow in some way an itch or uncomfortable to me. And whenever it would raise its head, and it might be 5 miles away, before it even show up, I would say something like this. I need a drink. You ever say I need a drink? Anybody? Am I the only one?
I thought I was just thinking of alcohol.
Am I the only one who ever said I need a drink? Now listen, how about you? But when I said I need a drink, it wasn't like, gee, I'd like to have a drink. Or a drink would be nice. It was pull the freaking car over. I need a drink. I said, I need a drink. You know what I mean? Well, you know why I would say things like I need a drink? You know why? This is gonna be tough. This is advanced alcoholism. Because I needed a drink. Because I needed a drink. Because that's exactly how horrible it felt to be breathing in this world. You see, you may have needed a reason to drink. I drank because I was awake. Awake was good enough for me. And so when alcoholism would come and rear its ugly head, I never gave alcoholism a chance because I would always chase it away with the booze. And then you know what happens? You drink and you drink and you drink. And if you drink long enough and hard enough, you start getting addicted to the booze. You start drinking a lot and then they arrest you. Or they divorce you. Or they indict you. Or they do something, because if you drink and you can't stop drinking, then terrible things happen to you. And so this is what you think. Because terrible things are happening to you. And somewhere, if you get bad enough, long enough, you start thinking that you may have, you ready for this? A drinking problem. You don't think you have a thinking problem. You think you have a drinking problem. Okay? Because my life turned into a bottle. My life, listen, I may have had a million things. If you had stopped one day, many years ago, I looked a man in the eyes and I said, I need help. I can't stop drinking. I didn't say I needed money. A week before, I would have said I needed money. 2 weeks before that, I would have said I need a girl. 5 weeks before that, I would have said I need another job. 10 weeks before that, I would have said, you don't understand. Or I would have said whatever. But on that particular day, at that time, my life had already turned into a bottle. Where no matter, even though I had every problem you could possibly imagine in the world, the drinking had gotten so bad that the other problems sort of like drifted way into the background. And I didn't even see them because all I saw was the bottle. That was the time in my life where I woke up in the morning and I said, I ain't going to drink today. And by 5 o'clock in the afternoon, I'm drinking. And I'd wake up in the morning and say, I ain't going to go to the bar today. And by 5 o'clock in the afternoon, I was in the bar. And I'd wake up in the morning and say, I'm not going to buy any booze today. And by 5 o'clock in the afternoon, I'm looking in my car for dimes, nickels, and quarters so I can go down to the Winn-Dixie and buy a quart bottle of Carlos Rossi Chianti and I could drink myself to sleep. And I did it over and over and over and over and over again until I finally gave up and I said, I can't stop drinking. I was 31 years old and I thought my life was over and I would never be able to stop drinking. I couldn't envision a life without drinking. I couldn't envision a life without drinking. And so where do you go? You come into this place called Alcoholics Anonymous. And so you are under the assumption, this is the assumption you're under, that this disease has something to do, right, with alcohol. I mean, the name sort of gives it away, you know what I mean? Nobody comes here to find God or get bad, you know, because they're crazy. You don't come here because you're crazy. You come in here because you suffer from alcoholism, because you can't stop eating, so you figure if you stop drinking, everything will be okay. Right? Wrong. The drinking, I drank because no amount of money, no woman, no car, no suit of clothes ever worked quite as well as just a few drinks, so I drank it. And if it worked for you like it worked for me, you drink it too. But unfortunately, alcohol stopped working for me. And the real sad thing about my life is alcohol stopped working for me about 10 years before I realized it stopped working for me, and I hurt a lot of people. And so the bottom line is I stopped drinking alcohol. I came in here and I stopped drinking. That's amazing. That's a whole other thing in itself. We'll get into that when we talk about second and third step. I stopped drinking alcohol. So now here's the good news. I'm crazy. I'm mentally right-handed. I'm prone to think. I have a brain that every time I think good, bad, or indifferent, it's creating toxic waste. My brain is thinking in such a way so that I'm going to drink or kill somebody someday without even knowing it. And to me, it's comfortable thinking that way, by the way. And I don't even know that's the problem because I think I have a drinking problem. And the only way I've been able to stop my brain from being scared stiff or feeling over my head or being worried about what other people think about me or getting some sort of relief is by drinking alcohol. And now I've managed to stop drinking, so I'm not using the only stuff that has saved my life and stopped me from blowing my brains out. So now it's just me, sober, experiencing full-blown alcoholism with nothing to dull the pain. And so 9 months sober, I'm sitting in my bed, and it's 3 o'clock in the morning. I can't go to sleep because my mind's going a million miles per hour, and there's 10,000 voices with that committee we talk about. And it's all about me and how bad I am, and I'm thinking about yesterday, I'm thinking about tomorrow, I'm thinking about 10 years from now, and I can't figure out what's going on, and I feel nuts, and now I know why I drank. But I can't stop my brain. And now I know what alcoholism feels like. And that's what I get to deal with for the next 40 years. So how would you like to deal with that deal for a while? But here's the good news. Now I'm going to tell you how you can get that thing go away, and it's going to be unbelievably marvelous for you in about 25 years. It's going to be great. We're going to lose about 90% of you, but that's okay. You know what I mean? There's going to be more taking your place, okay? A few of you, well, actually they say 1 out of 200. 1 out of 200 actually makes 20 years. That's what they say. That's the statistic. I'm probably wrong. Don't worry about that. I'm not, but you know, 1 out of 200 makes 20 years. So what happens is you develop your we. It says if you want what we have and you're willing to go to Aim Light to get it, then you're ready to take certain. You're not even ready to take the steps, according to the big book, unless you go through that first. You've got to want what we have. That means you've got to develop a we. You've got to find a we. I'm not going to tell you how to find your we or who your we is. I know I found a we. I didn't even know there was a we. I didn't even know what we had. All I knew is there were men in here that I wanted what they had because they had something else that I didn't know what they had. And everybody that I've ever known who has gotten to the next frontier, as Bill Wilson says, emotional sobriety, not just physical sobriety, emotional sobriety, has found a we. They all talk about the men and the women in their lives that they hung out with, that they watched, and all that sort of stuff. They all had a we. They all had somebody in their life, and they wanted what they had, and they were willing to go to any length to get it. And not everybody wants what we have. Some people just want what they had. They want what they had. And some people want what we have, but they're not willing to, you know, they're not willing to go to any length. They're not willing to give up Susie, even though she's a heroin addict. And she has that, but they're not willing to give up the job. They're not willing to give up. They're not willing to travel 10 miles to a meeting because it's too far. They want what we have, but they're not willing to go to any length to get it. One guy comes up to me. I do meetings here. I drive here. It's about 50, 60 miles.
65.
I'm not even complaining. I do it all the time. I'll do whatever I have to do in order to try to help somebody in Alcoholics Anonymous. So I'll drive up here. You want me to tell you the number of times people have come up to me? And for whatever, they follow me during a meeting or something like that. And it's a cool thing. It happens to people. And they say, you know, I really like what you have to say. Where do you hang out? I'd like to hang out with you. And I say, well, on Saturday morning, we have a meeting. Why don't you come on down with it? We have a meeting, then we all go out for lunch and everything. You can hang out with us. And he says, where? And I tell him where it is in Miami. He says, well, that's kind of far. And I say, yeah, I know. I said, yeah, I know it is. I know it is. I got 31 years, and I'm driving up here. They got 3 weeks. They want what I have, but they don't want to drive the 65 miles. Now, you want to know something? There are guys that will drive the 65. They show up. How come one guy shows up and drives 65 miles? And how come another guy looks at me and says, yeah, I really want you. Hey, he says, yeah, but that's a little far. What's the difference? I mean, that's where the rubber meets the road. That's when you find out, you know, what you will do in order to stay sober when you see somebody you want what they have. That's when you find, that's when the bullshit meter goes off and you find out whether, because, you know, this is AA. When all is said and done, there'll be a lot more said than done. You know what I mean? We're alcoholics. So the bottom line is, this is what he said in Alcoholics Anonymous number 3. It says, it would be hard to estimate how much AA has done for me. I really wanted the program, and I wanted to go along with it. I noticed that others seemed to have such a release, a happiness, a something that I thought a person ought to have. I was trying to find the answer. Now listen to this. I knew there was even more, something I hadn't got. And I remember one day, a week or two after I had come out of the hospital, Bill was at my house talking to my wife and me. We were eating lunch, and I was listening and trying to find out why they had this release that they seemed to have. Bill looked across at my wife and said, Henrietta, the Lord has been so wonderful to me, curing me of this terrible disease that I just want to keep talking about it and telling other people. I think I have the answer. Bill was very, very grateful they had been released from this terrible thing, and he had given God the credit for having done it. And he's so grateful about it, he wants to tell other people about it. That sentence, the Lord has been so wonderful to me, curing me of this terrible disease that I just want to keep telling people about it, has been a sort of golden text for the AA program and for me. And the point I'm making in this thing, there's a lot of points in this thing, but the point I'm making is this part right here. It says, I really wanted the program and I wanted others to go along with it. I noticed that others seemed to have such a release, a happiness, a something I thought a person ought to have. I thought a person ought to have. I was trying to find the answer. I knew there was even more.
I knew there was even something I hadn't got.
I got a call from a guy from Michigan yesterday, you know, and he had been listening to one of the tapes, you know, the recordings and everything like that. He had 27 years, and he said, you know, I was listening to this. He says, there's so much more to this thing than I knew there was. There's so much more than just not drinking. There's so much more than it's like a gold mine out there of stuff that's out. And that's what I want to talk about here. I want to talk about, you know, my heart, you know, I love the newcomer. My heart is really with a guy who's got 15, 20 years, who's hanging in there. You know, that's I'm hanging in there. Well, yeah, that's great. 14, 15 years of meetings, a buck in the place, they can hang in there. You know, I mean, that's what I'm looking for. That's the kind of deal I'm looking for. So I'm looking for those guys. I sponsor those guys. They got 25, 26 years and they're hanging in there. You wouldn't know that because they know how to talk AA. And so I go to this meeting. I go to this meeting when I'm about 3 months sober, and this is going to be like Pulp Fiction, you know. You ever see Pulp Fiction? I mean, it's just the way it is, you know. It's going to be you're going to have to bring something to the table here. This is going to be hand fit, you know. This is going to be like if you go to sleep for a second, you're going to miss it because I'm going to have some hard rights and some strong lefts, and you know we're going to start at the end and go to the beginning and back and forth. So I was at this meeting when I was 3 months sober. My sponsor said the guy was a good speaker, and. I got to the meeting, and the guy stood up and he said, my name's Bob, and I'm a recovered alcoholic. I was 3 months sober. Now, I knew that I had already read. I mean, I read the big book, sort of. And you know the way most people read the big book? They don't really read the big book. People don't read the big book. That's another story. Well, maybe I'll get into it a little bit here. But anyway, how many people have read the big book? No, you haven't. You really haven't. Trust me, you haven't read the big book. But you think you've read the big book. Because you read something. You opened the book. You probably were opening the book and you're probably reading it, right? Okay. We'll see how well you read the big book later on. But in any event, you read something. You read something you liked. Something like acceptance is the answer to all my problems. You read some things you liked. And there's some things in there you didn't like that you don't remember because, well, it doesn't really apply to you. So you didn't read those things. You skipped over those things, right? When you're 10 years sober and you're about to take a drink and blow your brains out, the things you skipped over and you didn't like because you didn't think you applied to you, those are the things that were going to save your life. You read the parts you liked that you understood and you skipped the parts you didn't like. Because you're an alcoholic and that's the way alcoholics think. They avoid the parts they don't like and say, stay out of my way, this is my program, we all have a different program, and they do away with the parts they don't like they don't apply to them, and they only adopt the parts they like that's comfortable to them because they want to stay right-handed as much as possible, and the parts that they don't listen to, that's what kills them. Is that for me?
Yeah.
See how much nicer I am. You wouldn't believe what I used to do with people. You know, that's a whole other story. Well, that's part of any length. Part of any length is turning off a cell phone for an hour. You know, and then I'm sure that was an accident. I'm not getting down. So I go to this meeting, and he says, recovered alcoholic. So I knew that you could be cured of this disease, right? I mean, I told you can't be cured of this disease. I wasn't a recovered alcoholic. I'd never heard anybody say they were a recovered alcoholic. I was a recovering alcoholic. Nobody has recovered. And, of course, this guy said, I'm recovered. And I couldn't believe he said, I'm recovered. It's almost like he's saying, I'm cured. And, of course, somehow, some way, I didn't even realize this. And I got pissed off at him. I said, how could he say he's recovered? You know what I mean? You can't be recovered. You can't be cured. This disease can't be cured. All you can do is be recovering. And he's killing newcomers. He's telling people that he's recovered from this disease when you can't recover from this disease. You can only be recovering. And then, and although I didn't realize this at that time, you know, since all alcoholics, except for the guys in this group, of course, inwardly think very poorly of themselves, you understand, don't think they're much, you know, they see the world's the way they are. So as soon as he said he was recovered, what I'm sort of thinking, he's really saying, like, he's better than me, you know, or he's talking down to me. And all I could think about, do you think it's possible to go through an entire AA meeting with a resentment or thinking about something on the outside or thinking about somebody or something and miss the entire meeting? Of course it is. There's people probably in here doing that, you know, thinking about something that happened, their wife said or their cousin said or the money or whatever it is, and you wake up like 5 minutes before the meeting's over and realize you're in a meeting, you know what I mean? And I'm sitting there because that's our mind, you know? And then you say, you've been to a meeting? Yes, but you haven't been to a meeting because you've just been to your mind, you know what I mean? And you've been to the disease and you're sitting in a meeting. So I'm sitting there you know, cursing this guy out in my mind. They ought to listen to me. I mean, why are they listening to him? You know, somebody's got to tell these people because they're not bright enough. They don't realize that he's giving the wrong message. He's saying he's recovered and it's recovering. He's telling people they're cured. And how can they let this fool talk? You know what I mean? He doesn't know what he's talking about. And so I walk out of the meeting and my sponsor says, so how was he? He says, he was terrible. He says, what do you mean he was terrible? He was terrible. He told people he was a recovered alcoholic. And my sponsor says, he says, well, you are. He says, what do you mean we are? We can't be recovered alcoholics. He says, Russell, read the book. He says, read the book. It says, we of Alcoholics Anonymous are more than 100 men and women who have recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. You see, apparently this guy with 30 years, he had apparently read the book. Imagine how much better my talk would be tonight if I had actually listened to this guy. He probably had some things to say. But you know that thing where you get a resentment and then all of a sudden against the guy and you don't listen to the word he says, that deal, you know what that is? That's called alcoholism. And you don't even know you had it. You don't even know you have it. And so one day when I'm 25 years old and I'm a division chief in the state attorney's office, tried murder cases and thinking I'm I own the world and, you know, in charge of four or five attorneys and getting my name in the paper and all sort of stuff with a beautiful house in Miami Beach, a beautiful child, a beautiful wife, and driving off to get into my blue suit and my white shirt and my red tie and getting ready to go off to court. And I walk out the door and my wife looks at me and I'm as sober as I am right now, as sober as I am right now. You know, as a matter of fact, even brighter, because that was when I had an actual brain, you know, and I came into AA with two neurons working and they were waving goodbye to each other, you know. And my wife looked at me and she said, I thought you should know if you come home drunk one more time, I'm leaving you. That's what she said. She wasn't starting an argument. She didn't yell at me. She didn't scream. She just looked at me and says, I just want to let you know, if you come home drunk one more time, I'm leaving you. Now, I've analyzed that statement. I've been married, by the way, I don't want to jump ahead of this, but I've been married to my wife for 31 years now. I have 4 children and 6 grandchildren. My second wife. So my first wife says, you come home drunk one more time, I'm leaving you. Now, I want you to analyze that statement. If you come home drunk one more time, I'm leaving you. You can't really take a word out of that. There's no fat, no adjectives, no nothing. It's like, wait, what would you take out? If drunk, I mean, if you come home drunk one more time, I'm leaving you. I graduated with departmental honors in mathematics, going for my doctorate in algebraic topology, studying calculus of manifolds and differential equations. Graduated law school. If you come home drunk one more time, I'm leaving you. I'm as sober as I am right now. It was just sort of like announcing it, like I thought you ought to know. Everything that's important to me, or should be important to me, is right up there on the line. I'm using my right-handed thinking. I'm an alcoholic. I walk out the door. I get into my car. I drive 3 blocks. I get to a light. This is what I say to myself. What the hell did she mean by that? Sure, you're laughing. You don't know what it's like. Alcoholics don't understand things like that. You come before me one more time, I'm putting you in jail. They don't know. What do you mean by that? You know what I mean? Hey, now, I'm going to tell you something. We're like idiot savants. You can be the greatest singer in the world. You can have the greatest talent in the world. You can be the smartest guy in the world. Trust me, if you don't quite understand, if you come home drunk one more time, I'm leaving you, if that sentence like confuses you or throws you, you're in for a bitter life. And I'll tell you a little axiom about alcoholism, and which that thing taught me a long time ago, because you learn better by experience. Whenever an alcoholic, now listen to this, this is very important because it has to do with what we're going to learn in the big book, because I'm going to quote you some stuff from the big book that you've never heard before. I'm going to read you stuff during this 12-week thing. I'm going to read you stuff from the big book that you've never heard before. I have people that come up to me and says, I can't believe it when you said that. It's unbelievable when you said that. And I say, you mean when I read that out of the big book? He said, yeah, that thing, the thing I read out of the big book. He says, yeah. He says, well, it's in the big book. I didn't make that up. That's in the big book. He says, yeah, but it's the way you read it. You know what I mean? In other words, I put a big spotlight on it so you couldn't avoid it, and I underlined it with the yellow highlighter, and I put it in your face, and I showed it how you play. He says, whoa, where did that come from? That's what usually happens to us. 20 years sober, we're about to blow our brains out. We decide instead of killing ourselves, we'll read the big book one more time, and all of a sudden we see a sentence and our life changes. Say, where the hell did that come from? You know? And this is what I learned, that whenever an alcoholic, from that deal, what my wife said to me, my first wife, whenever an alcoholic hears, sees, reads, or is told something he doesn't like, it confuses him. And he gets angry at it, and he makes it go away. He either crosses off the person or crosses off the incident. He makes it go away. And so we read this book. We read stuff in this book. And, you know, we read this stuff. We read all this. We like all the psychological stuff and all the things. And then all of a sudden we get to this part. We get to some part somewhere where it says this. And where we get to the third step, you know, and how it works. And we read a part in here. And then all of a sudden we're in how it works. And we get to this part. And we see this. And we get down to step number three. And then he says... And all of a sudden we see this, we read the third step prayer, maybe we do that, and then we say, and everybody knows the third step prayer because it's recited in the meetings. What's the sentence after the third step prayer? But nobody knows the sentence after the third step prayer. We thought well before taking this step, making sure we were ready, that we could at last abandon ourselves utterly to Him. Utterly to Him. When was the last meeting that you went to where they talked about, have you abandoned yourself utterly to Him? And what you find out is when they say at the end of the big book, see to it your relationship with Him is right and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. When they say we know very little, God will always disclose to you. He'll show you how to create the fellowship you crave. When it says job or no job, wife or no wife, nonsense, you don't need anything. It all depends upon your relationship with God. When it says we never apologize for God, when it talks all through the book about God, when every step is about pushing you towards God, okay? When at the very end you finally get to step 11, it's about even getting more of a faith in God. And the only thing you can think about is the wise guys in the A meetings who aren't really sober, who say, I don't want to hear that shit, because they're alcoholic. And they're putting down religion and religious people. When this thing first started, all they did was hang on to religious people. Where the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous says we lose prejudice, even against organized religion. We begin to see where people are right. And we understand that if you're sober and emotionally sober, because Bill Wilson said the next step is emotional sobriety, that our real problem is unhealthy dependencies. And it is clear that in this book, he says that we developed a faith in God. And, you know, that's the only thing that's going to save you in this thing. And that's what it's all about. And then you go to an AA meeting. And you're scared to talk about God. You're scared to even mention the name. You say higher power. When it's all through the steps and all through the book, because you're worried about some goop in the front row that isn't even paying your Visa bill, because you're so concerned about looking cool, which is the whole thing about alcoholics, is they feel so crappy about themselves that they can't be themselves. They got to try to blend in and fit in, because their whole life is about saying things like, I don't give a shit what other people think about me. I don't care what he thinks about me, when all you do is think about what other people think about you. Because people that really don't think about what other people think about them don't say, I don't give a shit what they think about me. They say things like, pass the peanut butter. They don't say that. You know what I mean? And your whole life is saying, how do I look and how do I feel? And what a crummy life to get to the end of your life and realize you haven't even lived your life and you haven't been free. You lived the life that you thought other people wanted you to live in order so that they would accept you, because not only you're an alcoholic, you're a please love me alcoholic, don't reject me alcoholic, why don't you accept me alcoholic, and why are you looking at me that way? And you think you are recovering from disease because you haven't had a drink, when all you are is a goof taking up space. And you haven't even mined the gold that's in this deal. That's in this deal. You're not even close to it. You're just doing AA light. And you go to meetings where people entertain you, and if they say something that challenges you or gets you upset or saying, you cross that sucker off the list, because you know something? You don't like it, so you make it go away, because you'd rather stay childish instead of growing up and becoming a man and a woman, or a woman. But every once in a while, if you're lucky, you'll run into somebody like Al Kennedy, and I'll close with this story. about the Wii's, and I don't know, and I don't take credit for this. I have no idea. It's not because I'm smart or anything like that. I've seen dumb people get this and smart people not get it. I have no idea. I'm at a meeting. I'm 3 months sober. And this is like one of those deals. I'm like 3 or 4 months sober, and, you know, you remember this thing like it was yesterday, and my sponsor brings us to this meeting, and there's a guy talking. I don't know how much time he had, 25, 30 years. His name was Al Kennedy. And, you know, it's like one of these things. I can't, you know, one thing about sponsors, my sponsors and old timers, and I don't know about you, but what used to really, I don't know whether you'd call it impress me, I'm not even sure why, like, I always felt safe around them. You know, on my own, especially when I can't, I never really figured this out when I was drinking. Because alcoholics have a way of telling themselves that black is white. They sort of tell themselves they're not scared when they're scared shitless. I have people that come into my office, sponsored. I have clients that come into my office. They do the same thing, sponsors or sponsees or stuff like that. And they'll talk to me for about a half an hour about how they're worried about this and they're worried about that and they're worried about this and they're concerned about their wife and they don't know what they're going to do about this and they're anxious about that and they really can't sleep at night because of this and because of that. And I'll look them in the eye after they go through a half an hour of telling me how scared they are. They don't know they're telling me they're scared because they don't use the word scared or afraid. They use the word worried. Or they have a lot of anxiety. Or they're real nervous. And then I'll say, okay, you're scared. And they'll say, I didn't say that. That's how, you want to know what the disease of alcoholism? That's how serious it is. You know, the first step in getting out of jail, you got to know you're in jail in the first place. When your whole life is running on fear because you're scared and you know you're not cut out for it. You can't handle it. And you can't even admit that you're scared to somebody else. You can't even admit that you're worried. That's a scary thing. And I'm sitting there in this meeting. The one thing about what happened is after I came to AA is I was cognizant of how screwed up and crazy and how scared and how ill-equipped I was to handle life. Because without the booze, just sitting there all alone in an AA meeting, coming to an AA meeting, you just know you need help. You just know, you know. You may look good in sound group, but you know you're just insufficient for the deal. You know what I mean? You just know. You just hope nobody else finds out, you know? And, you know, maybe if somebody else is talking about it first, you might share, yeah, I'm crazy too, you know? And what would happen is when I was around these old timers, you know, like Bob Sullivan and Joe Snyder, I just felt safe. I felt like nobody could touch me. The IRS couldn't touch me. My boss couldn't touch me. Nobody could touch me. And you know something? They would say things to me, like stupid things, but I would like, you know, I would say, you know, I would tell them about all these problems, and I say, you know, Russ, you don't drink, and you go to meetings, everything's going to work out. I said, everything's going to work out? He said, yeah, everything's going to work out. And I'd believe him. I somehow thought he knew. He wouldn't tell me how it would work out. He would say things like, you know, 9 out of 10 things that happen don't happen at all, Russ, that we think are going to happen. The one thing that happens different. And I said, really? I said, yeah. And I believe him. I mean, here's some guy. I've got all these degrees. I told my sponsor. I showed him why. I said he was a used car salesman. I showed him all my degrees. And he looked at me and he says, you know, Russell, rectal thermometers have degrees. You know what they do with those, you know? You know, and what I realized is that the things that we respect out there about people, money, cars, degrees, meant nothing in here. Meant nothing to these men. And I knew they had the answer. I didn't even know what they had. But I knew I felt safe around them. And I'm sitting there in an AA meeting, and I'm a thumb-sucking crybaby, you know, like most people are when they come to Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, if I have a paper cut, I'm willing to talk about that for the next 10 years, you know. I need 15 meetings and a banana, you know. And I'm sitting in a meeting, and one of these guys, Al Kennedy, one of these old-timers is talking, and he's, like, loving on people, and he's lifting, you know, one of these guys that's talking, and all of a sudden you're, like, mesmerized by him. He's making me feel, you know, you're just watching him, because I knew I was watching a man, you know. I don't know anything about the women thing or anything like that, but I know one of the things that goes on in a man's mind is he wants to be a man. He wants to make sure he's a man that everybody else knows he's a man. God forbid they should find out, like, you're less than a man, which, of course, I knew I wasn't really a man, but I wasn't going to tell anybody else I wasn't a man because I didn't even know what a man was. I wasn't even sure, you know. But I could tell that this guy was a man. You know, this. You know, you can tell when you're looking at a guy and says, now, this guy, this is a man. I wanted what he had, okay? I wish I could be like him, or maybe hanging out with him. Maybe I could find if I could hang out with him. And he's talking about his story, and he's saying, I don't even remember what he's saying, but I realized I was mesmerized by him, and he was obviously strong and comfortable in his own skin, but he wasn't like arrogant, you know what I mean? And he wasn't like talking down to people, and He was loving, but he wasn't weak. You know, he was just perfect. He was the kind of guy, and I've met him in my life in Alcoholics Anonymous. He says, I wish I could hang around. I'd like to hang around that guy. I'd like to know that guy. You're sort of like an AA daddy or an AA big brother. I'd like to hang with that guy. I could learn a lot from that guy. That guy could help me. I wish I could know that guy. And he walked out of the room, and I turned to my sponsor. This is a true story. You know, these are the kind of things that change your life and your perception of things. I turned to my sponsor, and I said, that guy was great. I really liked him. And he says, you know, he's dying. He said, you know, he's dying. Now, I'm going to tell you something. This guy never mentioned anything about dying. Can you imagine? How many guys have ever gone to a meeting and shared that they, you know, they lost their job, they got money problems, they have problems? So he says, you know, he's dying. I said, what do you mean? I said, I'm talking about, he says, he's dying of cancer. I said, I'm talking about Al Kennedy, the guy who just shared. He says, Russell, he's dying of cancer. He's got 3 months to live. I looked at him like, you know, I couldn't wrap my mind. Can you wrap your mind about that? I mean, if I have a paper cut, I'm good for 3 weeks. You know, this guy's dying. I couldn't. How could you go to an AA meeting and talk like that and be dying of cancer, you know? And I'm looking at him, and I'm saying, I'm talking. He says, Russell, he's got 3 months to live. He's dying of cancer. He never even mentioned it. And my conception of this what this thing could, you know where this guy says, I knew there was something more? I knew there was something more, something I hadn't, I knew there was something more. I mean, you know, it's like playing golf. I play golf. And Tiger Woods play golf, and I use clubs, and Woods uses clubs, and I play on, you know, the Blue Monster, and Tiger Woods plays on Blue Monster, but he's playing a different game than me. And I knew this guy was playing a different AA game than I was. He was in a different deal, because he was dying of cancer, and it was like it didn't even affect him. He was fine. He was better off spiritually and emotionally than I was. And he had 3 months to live. And I didn't even know what he had. I couldn't even wrap my mouth. But I knew I wanted what he had. When everything about you, you're scared. And I knew I wanted what he had. And I was willing to go to any length to get it. And I didn't even know what length I had to go to or what I had to do. But I knew I saw. Now here's the deal. In my way of thinking, everybody must have seen that. You see, those guys, I think like everybody sees that. It's a program for everybody must see that. And what I found out in Alcoholics Anonymous is everybody doesn't see that. Everybody doesn't want that. You meet somebody, you see somebody, he says, man, I want to have, and you say somebody, everybody doesn't see that. Everybody doesn't necessarily want that. You know what I mean? But I want, and you know something? I can say a lot of things about my life, a lot of things about my testimony that I'm talking about, but I'll tell you something, I can't give you desire. You know what you can't give? I can't give you desire. Desire has to come from God and from within you. The desire to do anything to get to that deal. Because you don't get anywhere in this deal without sacrifice. Guys, you either sacrifice the woman. Women, you're going to sacrifice the man. You know, you're all going to sacrifice the money. Let me tell you, you're going to sacrifice. It's all about sacrifice. It's all about, you don't get to the next level until you give up, until you die to this world. The worldly clamors will kill you in this thing. You'll come here for an AA meeting once, 1 hour a week or 2 hours a week, and you'll go out there to the billboards, and you'll go out there to the TV shows, and you'll go out there to the movies, and you'll go out there to the television, and you'll go out there to your friends, and none of them are talking about this stuff. Hell, they're not even talking about this stuff in Alcoholics Anonymous. They're talking about, getting your breasts enlarged. They're talking about getting a new blouse or a new shirt. They're talking about cars. They're talking about money. They're talking about everything this world is hungry for, that you chased for, and that you say, I wish I had this, I wish I had that. Everything you talk about at the discussion meetings when you're whining and crying about what you don't have. Everything that's killing you, they're talking to you about that 24-7. And one guy mentions God in here and put him number one in your life, see what your relationship with him is right. And 15 guys in the back of the room walk out and say, I don't want to hear this shit. And that's in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know why? Because the fellowship is made up of alcoholics, and they all suffer from alcoholism. And they basically all don't want to do this program. They all don't want you to mind your business. It's already talk about the business, but don't get the meddling. You understand what I'm saying? Making any sense? So thank you very much. Next week we'll talk about something.